From the University of Alberta Alumni Association, it's What the Job. I'm Matt Ray.
Sometimes you have to be a little bit embarrassing and just say, hi, I'm here and I'm ready to, you know, connect with you and I want to do something meaningful. And people are usually more than happy to have folks join you.
My guest on this episode of What the Job is Nikita Valeria. Currently a PhD student in religious studies at the University of Alberta, Nikita has also served as the research director for the Institute for Religious and Socio-Political Studies, and she's run her own editing and writing small business. We chat all about how she's navigated these different career paths, how the skills she's developed through study and travel have helped her throughout her career, and where she thinks her PhD will take her. What the Job is made possible with the support of our affinity partner, TD Insurance. Did you know that through the TD Insurance Mellish Monix program, University of Alberta alumni are entitled to preferred rates on car, home, condo, and renter's insurance? Save even more by bundling your car and home insurance. To learn more about how you can save, please visit tdinsurance.com/UAlbertaAlumni. So what's your name and what's your job?
My name is Nikita Valerio, and I am currently a PhD student in religious studies at the University of Alberta. I'm also a TA.
And what do you do? How do you balance that? That is a, you know, I mean, full disclosure, I also have a PhD, so I recall the days of balancing the research and the teaching. How do you find that?
It's been great so far. I just started back. I came back into the university ecosystem in September. I had remained in the research world and the academic world between my MA and my PhD. There's 5 or 6 years between them. And I had remained in that kind of world, but the balance has definitely been a bit of a challenge because I also homeschool my children, my 2 young children, and I'm obviously very invested in my research and very interested in the topics, so I can get carried away for sure. But it's been really about building systems of support and getting through that. I'm also really enjoying TAing, like supporting students along the way and learning more, especially when it's outside my subject area.
And what is your subject area? What are you studying?
So right now I am working in the field of studying Muslim women's leadership and Quranic literacy in Morocco. I come from a background of Moroccan studies. My MA work was on Islamic Jewish studies, looking at the memory of the departure of Jews from Morocco in the mid to late 20th century. So still kind of in the same area studies, but definitely have a different focus this time around.
And has it, for you, has it been a straight kind of shot from undergrad to master's to PhD, or have you done things along the way?
I've done lots of random things along the way. I've actually always had at least 5 years between degrees. So I always do lots of different things during my degrees and after. So I did do my BA in history with a minor in English at the University of Alberta. I graduated in 2009. And shortly after that, I did a lot of interesting things like becoming Muslim. I moved to Morocco. I married my husband, and in his small town, we built a school. So we were furthering education there. And I also worked in nonprofit associations and taught in Morocco as well. I came back to Edmonton in 2014 to pursue my master's work. And at that time, I became more of a community advocate, and I was involved more in community organizing within Muslim communities, but also doing interfaith work, as well as just supporting women and academics, especially Muslim young academics. And I started my own business at that time too. So, you know, running a small business while having your master's course load and stuff, it was a lot. But it helped me expand my knowledge areas a lot, because the work that I was doing it was quite multifaceted. Like the business that I started was an editing and writing business. So I supported other academics, which exposed me to, you know, the most cutting edge research, really interesting methodologies. I would do a lot of copy editing work or give, consultative feedback. I ended up doing a lot of academic strategizing and support for people who are working in grad school. So helping them get on with their theses and their dissertations. And, you know, doing a lot of editing work helped me see what that looked like and what that process looked like so I could aid other people as well. But I also did, you know, digital marketing and content development. So I was applying my skills in completely different ways, you know, like writing blogs about the Dominican Republic or, you know, writing blogs about dentistry or about common law in Alberta, all sorts of things where I was applying research skills that I had, you know, developed at the university and had worked with to completely different areas. So yeah. And then after I graduated from my MA, I became a research director, not in a linear way, but partway through my break between my MA and my PhD, I became the research director with a independent research institute that really focuses on like actionable research for Muslim communities in Canada and religious communities of all stripes. So that was a really cool way to apply my research skills, but to really tangible community efforts that were, you know, like we would do consultation work with Muslim community organizations, or we would advocate at the level of government with the community research that we were doing. And a lot of it was really like, cross-pollinating different communities and making connections and networking, lots of writing, lots of editing. So all those skills came in handy all through that.
What made you want to start doing all these other projects? Like, was it just that you were looking for work, you were looking for another income, or were you just really drawn to that type of work?
I think I've always, you know, been drawn to writing and editing. I've always been wanting to support people. I'm a first generation academic in my family. So I always wanted to support and help people through that process. I think also, you know, my background's Italian, so I'm white, and I really wanted to leverage some of the privilege that I've had in the systems that I live in, that we all live in together, to aid folks in my community and really support them who might be first gen academics as well, who are maybe in the social sciences and humanities in fields that their family backgrounds don't necessarily come from. So really just wanting to leverage that and like uplift and just offer services, you know, that to folks that you know, aided them in what they wanted to do in the interests of like collaborative scholarship. So just trying to be an ear for people, trying to hold space for them, but also my research led me to realize that my community needed certain things. So, throughout all of this, even though I'm talking about, you know, the small business and everything like that, and the other jobs and stuff that I have, and even though I was able to marry some of my work with my community efforts, I've also done volunteer work throughout this whole period within my community. And some of that stemmed from some of the research that I was doing and seeing that there were, you know, holes in services that community members needed, and then developing organizations around those gaps. So for example, I'm a founder and facilitator for something called the Nuseba Collective, which is a Muslim women's holistic community group where we connect Muslim women with knowledgeable teachers and scholars so that they can learn their faith in a coherent and balanced way that's super accessible to them as mothers or working women, and a way of building community and sisterhood as well. And that came directly out of my research. You know, so these things have a way of sort of organically arising and just really trying to not only take opportunities as they come, opportunities for service specifically, but also combining, experiences that I've had and people's, knowledge that I've been exposed to because I was doing editorial work or because I met somebody in community or because I'm learning about deficiencies in the system because I'm advocating for my community. All these things come together in like a really holistic way so that you start to either build new projects or support projects that are out there and people that are out there doing the things that you can see. So it's really a holistic approach and not trying not to let too many opportunities fall by the wayside, not as like a CV pat or something like that, but just really seeing how you can use your skills in the service of others.
Holistic is a great way to put it from what I heard anyhow, because it sounds to me that you have found a great way, although you're incredibly busy, so I don't know about that, but you found a great way to identify, you know, your interests, passions, values, and to marry that with the things that you do, the, your career achievements as well. And, you know, some of that also stemming from your research, which academic labor is labor, obviously. To be able to fit those in, I guess what I'm wondering is, like, how do you consciously think about, you know, I know you do this community activism and stuff like that. Are you consciously thinking about where you want to put your efforts and put your work, or are you sort of developing skills and they just sort of organically and naturally fall into these places?
I would say that now I have to be much more balanced and intentional about what I choose to put my time and my efforts towards. And that's given me the permission to, I would say, like, pick and choose what I'm able to spend my time on and offer folks in a much more concentrated and a more aligned way. So, you know, someone looking at where I'm at in my career path right now would say, wow, you're doing things like everything seems in alignment. You know, like, it is that holistic approach, your research, your community, your religious views, everything are in alignment, right? It didn't always look that way, though, you know, and I got there by trying different things that maybe are a bit unconventional, like starting my own business and not really knowing how that would go. And, you know, working for a, you know, a random group of clients, and being really privileged to work with them, but working in areas that I would never really have any expertise in, and having to kind of cultivate a working level of, like, foundational knowledge to be able to support those clients and stuff. So I would say that in the past, I was much more open to saying yes to certain opportunities that probably I wouldn't have the time for now, because of, you know, the my ability to, like, put my efforts towards things that are really in alignment with what I want to do, and how I want to serve. But I still see value in those things that I did as helping me to become clear with myself, actually, about what I want to do. You know, I learned quickly, well, I don't know if 6 or 7 years is a quick turnaround, but I learned pretty quickly that I don't have a future in digital marketing. It's not my bag. I don't love content development for the sake of content development. I think it has a really important purpose. I think educating the public and making things accessible to them and written in accessible and interesting ways is really an important genre of writing, but it's not one that I can say that I'm, like, super in love with, though it did pay the bills for many years. So I hope that helps with anybody who's kind of, like, off experimenting. You know, there was, like, lots of different times, even when I had my dream job of, you know, you're working as a research director for an institute serving your community, your religious community in Edmonton and in Canada rather, and other religious communities, you know, like, that's a dream job. I'm getting paid to do that. I'm doing it from home. I can still homeschool my kids. Like, it was amazing. And at the same time, I realized, okay, this is awesome, and I'm so grateful and blessed to be serving in this way, but maybe this isn't really the research area that's for me at this particular point, which led me back to my PhD and being able to pursue studies that I feel really matter to me and my community specifically.
I'm interested in talking to you about how you developed your business, because I think that's something that people might be really interested in as well. How did you go about, say, like, finding clients? How did you manage those relationships? How did you decide how much work you can take on and what you could meet? Like, all those little intricacies that people may not think about before they launch a business.
Yeah, it's a great question. My business model happened super organically. I did basically no advertising. it was always word of mouth. Every once in a while, I'd post on my personal, you know, social media pages, which have grown quite exponentially because of my work as a community activist and, you know, a public speaker and things like that. You know, I would post that I offer these services. And so you would get referrals every once in a while that way. But really, it was word of mouth. So, you know, you edit one person's dissertation and they tell another person, you know, or you edit one, you copy edit or you fact check the citations for one professor's chapter in a book, and they'll tell another professor, right? So you sort of develop this, like, chain and this network of people. And it is about balancing your time and picking and choosing what you do have time for. It is hard though when you're doing the hustle of your own business to say no to things. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously I would if something was like completely out of my wheelhouse and I felt like an ethical obligation, like, no, I can't write like medical articles or something like that, right? Like you have to be really choosy about that for ethical reasons. But other things, you know, it was easy to say yes to them. The biggest thing is navigating whether or not the relationship was ongoing or if it was kind of a one-off thing or if they would need you every once in a while. So figuring that out, there of course is like a fair amount of instability from that. You know, if you have, you know, 10 papers to edit, you know, especially with if you're following kind of like an academic calendar because you're working for a lot of academics, if you have 10 papers to edit in October and you have none in May, right, it can leave you things pretty slim then. But that's where having the diversity of my skills applying really helped, you know, so that at that time I could be doing more work in digital marketing or I could be approaching other like more consistent clients. I think in terms of like balancing client relationships too, when I was doing digital marketing, a big part of that is contract negotiation. So you could know that you were set for like a year, the client would want X amount of blog articles, X amount of social media posts every single month for a 12-month period. And then you could renew that contract at the end of the year. So you do know, you do have like a base information about what you may or may not have on the roster. And then you can build from that and say yes or no to other things that kind of come along the way. But it depends on how you're serving, right?
And did you have any sort of like formal training in writing and editing before you jumped into it? Or was it just something you had learned as an academic and as a writer on your own?
Yeah, so it's definitely a skill. Like research is a skill that I honed in my first degree, obviously, being in history. And even though my minor was in English, I did quite a few classes in creative writing and consider myself like a creative writer as well. So just applying those skills. But I did also do professional development. So I would take like courses on digital marketing, just, you know, or even just reading and learning about them. So there's that research aspect that comes in as well, to be able to like develop and hone that skill. Or to know when to outsource it. So if SEO, search engine optimization or something is getting like too complicated for me, it's something that I actually would subcontract out for. Or if my plate got too full, which happened many times over the years, like I wasn't doing this entirely by myself either. I would subcontract out to other freelance writers and actually was able to help, not help, but like have them help me by supporting the business and doing the writing, but was able to offer them mentorship and learning opportunities through the way. And I think I had a total of about 7 writers that I've worked with since 2014 up until 2021 when I took my full-time job and effectively closed my writing business down.
Oh, you must have built quite a network.
Yes, it was large. I mean, by the end of it, it was a huge decision for me to kind of close my business down and take a full-time job working as the research director for the Institute for Religious and Sociopolitical Studies, because I was closing down what was an annual salary that's completely legit. Like it was completely competitive with what I would be offered, you know, like it was a beautiful thing that I made this business from nothing and I had a salary at the end of it. I had to cobble it together through different contracts and all the work that I was doing in the year, but it was there, you know, and I got into some really cool fields. Like I got into ghostwriting books for people and I got into, you know, areas that I never really expected. I also got into the freelance, the contract-based independent researcher world, right? So I started doing research fellowships and that's how I ended up in my full-time position, right? Wow. Yeah, so it's kind of cool how the diversity in that really led me to that career path. But it was, you know, like it was good money. And I, you know, I decided to set that aside and then take my full-time work.
And what's different now about what you do, like in terms of the skills you use for your current role, how has it changed and what have you carried over?
That's a great question. I mean, I think I honestly think that the ability to churn out a lot of writing quickly has really helped me in my PhD studies, for sure. There's no question. There's so much writing to do, response papers weekly for multiple classes, an enormous volume of reading. You have to get really good at synthesizing ideas quite quickly. And so all of that's carried over, yes, from my academic training, but working in the freelance or like independent world where things work a lot faster than the sort of sometimes bureaucratic inertia of academia, you're expected to turn things around a lot quicker. And so that's helped me in my current position as a PhD student to really manage my time. I think that's the biggest thing, is managing my time and being able to be okay with developing drafts quickly and knowing that they'll be edited later and that's okay. Like, they're, you know, it's sort of like destroys your perfectionism. It's not all gone. I mean, any friend of mine who's going to hear this is going to laugh because they're like, you're still a perfectionist. But it definitely like helps take that edge off. If you've done a huge volume of writing, you know, then one paper here or there, a chapter for your dissertation doesn't feel so overwhelming, right? You have this whole gigantic portfolio behind you. And that doesn't even include all the editing stuff that you do, where you sort of get this insider look at people writing their own dissertations. So now I know what that process looks like. I know what their writing looks like. I know how their writing process with their supervisors looks like. And that gives me an inside kind of look into what I have to do now in my own program.
And what was it that triggered for you to think, to decide to pursue a PhD? Because it wasn't just a, you know, I'm done my master's, time to do a PhD. You had lots of options, could have done lots of things. Why did you decide to come back and do a PhD?
It's a great question. Yeah, I mean, I could have continued what I was doing in my research-based community service for as long as the funding lasted, right? The biggest reason is I feel compelled, and any writer will maybe resonate with this, I felt drawn by the project. So a lot of people will do a PhD because they want a job in academia after, which, you know, in the kind of neoliberal climate of this time is like really high dreaming. I'm not really here for that. I want to make a contribution. I believe research is a collaborative, critical activity that we do in relation with other people. It's justice minded, and it has real world impacts. Contrary to what people think of the ivory tower of academia, our ideas and how we produce knowledge really, really matters. So I want to make that contribution. And I also just fell in love with my project. I want to go, I want to spend time visiting and learning and witnessing these Muslim women leaders in Morocco who are working with other women in Quranic literacy and who are doing incredible things. And I think it's a beautiful honor to be able to witness what they're doing and the knowledge that they're producing and to be able to write about it in a way that's meaningful, hopefully, inshallah, and impactful.
How have you found the shift of writing? I mean, I know you were doing a lot of different types of writing in your freelance world, academic writing. You were doing some of that as well, you said. So, but have you found it different to shift back to, you know, dissertation writing, or is it all just, you know, just a new another type of writing that you've already done?
Yeah, there's definitely a genre or register shift between community-based research and academic work. The work we did had academic rigor. There's no doubt about that. And it has, I mean, even we were so blessed with IRSS to be able to launch the Religious and Sociopolitical Studies Journal through the University of Alberta's OJS system here. So it's definitely an academic institute. I definitely think, though, given that I'm slightly shifting disciplines, I'm in religious studies, especially with an anthropological look. I'm focused right now a lot on the theoretical, which, you know, when you're doing community action-based research, you sort of have your methodologies sorted out and you're executing them and applying them to learn quickly and turn that into actionable information for organizations that are waiting for that, basically. But the nice thing about doing a PhD is you have a bit more time to sort of suss out what you're doing, the ethical implications of it, why you're doing that particular approach, and what theoretical contributions that you can make. So I do think there's a bit of a different, there is a little bit of a shift in the genre. It's not just go in, write a survey, you know, and then write an analysis from whatever the people say. It's definitely a lot more complex and nuanced, which is why I think at the end of it, you write a book. You don't just write an academic article. So yeah, there has been definitely a shift, but because I do have that background in editing people's dissertation work, I'm on, you know, a PhD committee for a psych student at University of Calgary, which a lot of people would surprise a lot of people, you know, not having a PhD yet myself, how can I be on a committee? Well, it's because you develop expert knowledge in that particular person's research area because of the other work that you do, right? So you can serve in different ways and you learn about things in different ways. So all of those things have combined to sort of inform the shift in writing that I'm currently endeavoring.
And in terms of your TA work, how involved is that? Are you lecturing? Do you go up in front of the class, or is it mostly grading, or what's your involvement?
It is mostly grading right now. I do have the opportunity to teach, which I wish right now I would be able to take the prof that I'm TAing for up on. Unfortunately, I just don't have the time to be able to take, you know, that full advantage and lecture. I do know that there are opportunities within the department after you pass your candidacy to potentially eventually teach a class and even potentially design one, which I would absolutely love to do. You know, it sounds like more work on your plate, like while you're supposed to be doing your research and writing your dissertation, but it's just another chance to do something in the space of my degree that I wouldn't otherwise normally get to do, right? So part of it, you know, sometimes I think folks, especially if they're in their undergrads, it can feel like a bit of a slog sometimes. You just want to get to the end of your degree. But having like gone, you know, graduated and worked in the world and different things like that, being in the university ecosystem is a really special and unique time in your life. And it's a time where you can take advantage of a lot of other things that you might not otherwise get the opportunity to do. So it's something that I've definitely wanted to pursue more as a TA, and hopefully will get the chance to once I have a little bit more time.
I completely agree. I think universities are these really rare institutions that don't really exist otherwise. And, you know, you talk about the neoliberal university, who knows how long they will exist for. But but for now, I think I agree. They are special places and you only have access to them for a limited amount of time. So it's important to take advantage.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like other skills that you've developed, you know, you talked about volunteering and you talked about community engagement. And I think engaging with communities, when people are passionate about it, how do you go about that? Like, what are the best ways to get involved with communities if you're not already in them?
That's a great question. I think starting with like grassroots community-based organizations, there are lots. They can be, I mean, we've done several studies on, at least in our community, Muslim community organizations, and they range from national organizations down to provincial ones, down to municipal ones, down to neighborhood organizations. So really just going out there and getting to know organizations, attending public events if they have them, so you can see if they're a good fit for you, meeting people, networking with them. It's a good opportunity to sort of like suss out an organization to see if that's a place that you could serve. And if everything's in alignment for you, or if they even have opportunities. Most of the time, community organizations have like a dearth of volunteers, so they would love to have people come out and be interested in what they're doing. You don't need to be super formal about it. I think when I first became Muslim, I really wanted to get involved with community organizations. I sent like some goofy email that was like, please let me volunteer for you. I just wanted to know people, you know, like I was like the lone Muslim in my family. I didn't have too many friends and stuff. And folks did take me under their wings. And that led to a lot of really great volunteer opportunities, you know, like serving meals to houseless folks, just doing any kind of like charitable endeavors that we could do, raising political awareness for causes that matter to us and things like that. But that, you know, sometimes you have to be a little bit embarrassing and just say, hi, I'm here and I'm ready to, you know, connect with you and I want to do something meaningful. And people are usually more than happy to have folks join you.
I think that's the key at the end there, you know, and this is true for even just networking. The more people I talk to, most of the time people are willing to like help you or welcome you and be, I think we often imagine worst case scenarios, especially when it comes to having to interact with strangers and things like that. Whereas usually people are pretty kind, I find anyway.
More or less. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if I like recently I had to look back at the first email that I sent my potential MA advisor when I was still in Morocco at the time with our like running our school and stuff. And I sent her an email. She did eventually become my MA advisor, who I love very dearly, Dr. Jocelyn Hendrickson, and she's still here in my department, which is great. But I looked back at that email recently, and it was so cringy. It was so embarrassing. I was like, oh my God, how did she even reply to me? You know, I was talking about things that had absolutely nothing to do with my master's. Like, it was so silly, right? But from that relationship, of course, like, I was able to complete my degree and really, like, change my whole life trajectory. So it's okay to be cringy sometimes. There's a quote I've been using a lot recently, because this is so, of course, it's a paraphrased quote, it's not a perfect quote, but Imam Nawawi, who's a revered scholar in our tradition, basically said that the student who isn't comfortable with humiliation will never learn anything, you know. So that's not an exact quote, but the gist of the idea is that you have to get used to putting yourself out there. Now, I recognize, like, having neurodiversity myself, like, that's not always easy to do. It can bring up a lot of anxiety and whatnot. But I found for myself that being open about that too, you know, and just talking to people about, like, hey, this is kind of awkward, but I wondered if you had any openings or, like, volunteer opportunities, or do you know anybody who's looking for this kind of work? You know, people are usually pretty cool about it. I think there's a lot more openness now, people talking about such things. And I've been, you know, a major vocal person for mental health awareness and things like that. And so I, like, there's real people out there, you know. Mm-hmm. You can be real with them too and say, hey, maybe this isn't polished. Maybe I don't really know what I'm doing, but I just want to help. And I think that's a beautiful thing, especially given the state of our world. Like, it's so nice when people just want to do good things in their community and have other people help facilitate that.
Yeah. And you were talking about that kind of, like, understanding yourself a little bit as you go through this journey. And I often think career journeys align with self journeys of discovery of who you are and what things you like and what things you don't like, and how easy it is or hard for you to approach things. Because, you know, this is a career advice podcast, and we'll often have people on who share their stories and their advice. But it's important for people to recognize that there's many paths in these career journeys and many ways to approach things. So learning that is, I think, really important. So one thing I want to ask you before we move on to the lightning round is, you know, you've made all these moves. You were in Morocco building or in schools around there, and you're doing your master's. You're doing a doctorate. You had a business. Do you anticipate a future that's more, you're going to just really sink into one thing, or do you think you'll always be darting about?
It's a great question. I was thinking about this just the other day, actually. I was like, what? You know, I don't want to get too ahead of myself, because I know, like, obviously from my religious practice and my faith, I know that whatever's meant to open for me will be opened. And that path, inshallah, will, like, unfold before me. And it's just a matter of maintaining that alignment with our values and our principles along the way to stay focused, but also doing that check-in work with myself about if I'm experiencing difficulty or, like, friction coming up against doing particular tasks and things, maybe those things in the future aren't necessarily for me. And so there is this kind of honing that happens where you do get more focused. At the same time, I am pretty open to what the future holds. I know I'll be spending a lot of time doing my field work in Morocco, and I don't know what that means for me in the future, who I will meet and who I will come across. I know that writing and research you know, trying to uplift and serve people wherever I go will be a part of what I do, but that I can't necessarily say that that's going to manifest as, or turn up rather as, like, one thing or the other. I do think that I try to keep myself open to the people that I meet, within certain boundaries, right? Like, you don't want to be so open that you're carried in any old direction and you lose sight of, you know, how the contributions that you want to make in this world. But at the same time, sometimes we don't always know our best fit if we don't try different things. So it's really that kind of walking that fine balance. And I think I'm just going to stay as open as I can, but also knowing where my skills and areas, my strengths of service are to be able to make a lasting contribution, inshallah.
That's very wise, very beautiful. We're going to move on now. This is the end thing. We're going to do the lightning round. And these are just questions I ask everybody. And you can just go with whatever first comes to your head. When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, it's no surprise to anyone that I wanted to be a writer.
And you did it.
I did it. I had this moment where I actually achieved my childhood dream. And I thought, I'm a writer. This is so strange. Yeah, I'm so blessed.
What advice might you have for anyone who feels like they are stuck in their job, like they're in some sort of career rut?
Yeah. Honestly, the first thing that comes to mind is to have trust, to take some time to get to know yourself and really what you want to do. And also trust that sometimes you have to make big moves to get on a different path that might be more rewarding for you and more meaningful for you. It also means having trust in the support systems that you have around you if you do decide to make a shift. That doesn't necessarily mean leaving a job, but it might just be looking at that work a little bit differently and finding maybe other areas that you can serve and be supported in. But it could also be a big shift. So finding your trust, I think, is something really important.
What is your favorite thing about what you're doing right now? I know that's pretty vast for you, right? Because you're doing a lot of things.
Honestly, I'm so blessed to be able to do anything that I'm doing right now. I would say that the sense of fulfillment, honestly, that I get from my religious background allows me to really find meaning in everything that I'm doing, which is maybe why I'm able to approach what I'm doing with so much passion, no matter what it is. I would say that my favorite thing is discovery, learning about other people, learning about other cultures, and also self-discovery through that, like we talked about, and just serving other people, seeing people reach potentials that they never thought that they could, is a really beautiful thing, especially when you're doing like academic strategy work or consultation with folks to really help them realize their vision. It's so humbling.
And last one, if you could go back in time and talk to the you that just finished their undergrad, what advice might you have for yourself?
This is such an emotional question. I would tell myself, just hold on, because I was in a pretty dark place after I graduated with not a clear path in front of me. And alhamdulillah, just holding on helped me to find my way.
That's perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and chatting with us about this really fascinating career path. Thank you a lot.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of What the Job, and a special thanks to our guest, Nikita Valerio, for talking to us about her career. And as always, a reminder that the best place for alumni to connect with other alumni about jobs, mentorship, or volunteer opportunities is the online platform Switchboard. It's free, and you could try it out today at uab.ca/sboard. It's a great tool no matter where you are in your career journey. That's it for this episode. For What the Job, I'm Matt Ray. See you next time.